Chapter 40. The team of black-clad Rupak operators numbered 12, with one more dead from the failed attempt to destroy Badger 6. The Rangers were outnumbered, but they had driven away Rupak's transport vehicle, they had reinforcements inbound via heavy hauler, and Sergeant Stanga was keeping Rupak heads down by turning the Badger's guns from threat in the sky to the new threat on the ground. That threat crept along the rocks that obscured the Badger. The enemy had gone around and over the ridge to put themselves in position to fire down on Stanga. Corporal Stewart and the rest of Stanga's team countered from behind the cover of the nearest buildings and trees. Though ferocious, the resulting battle was a chess match. Each side concentrated its fire and moved in anticipation of blocking the other from its goals. For the Rangers, that meant stopping the Rupak soldiers from getting direct fire on Stanga, who was the most exposed, while at the same time keeping a wary eye for any more Rupak regulars who might seek to flank them.
"We could use some help over here, LT," Stewart called in.
With Stanga occupying himself with keeping Rupak heads down, it had fallen to the assistant squad leader to call in reports.
"Roger," Harmon replied. "I'm moving to your position with an OSE force. Hang in there."
Hang in there. That was the refrain Stewart had heard repeatedly in the battle so far, young as it was. First platoon was inbound. Hang in there. Brody might be able to assemble a mortar strike. Hang in there. Harmon and OSE militia were pushing to assist. Hang in there. Because what else could you do? The Rangers drew first blood by sending grenades to airburst over a Rupak soldier who had been running across the rocks in an attempt to get a better angle on the Badger. That man went down and slipped between two boulders, the crimson evidence of his wounds dripping down the stones like a paint spill. Trading fire like heavyweights, the two sides hammered away at one another. SPC Kincaid proved that he'd earned his expert marksman badge with a well-aimed shot that struck a Rupak soldier in the forearm and ricocheted up into his clavicle. The soldier was pulled behind stony cover by his buddies. Grenades were launched at the Rangers. They took cover, moved, kept shooting. Dunn was the first casualty when a burst of shrapnel needled its way into his ankle and lower leg, digging past the armor where it was most flexible to allow a full range of motion.
"Hit!" he called out. "Hurts like a son of a bitch, but I'm good."
As he picked himself up, the other Rangers sent suppressive fire into the Rupak positions, allowing him to run, or aggressively hop on one foot, into a position of better cover. For Stanga, the task of keeping Rupak at bay felt like a game of whack-a-mole. They wanted no part of the Badger's guns, and kept down as long as Stanga focused fire on their sector. But the other Rangers couldn't keep all of the Rupak men down. They would move, pop up, and send incoming fire at Stanga. Some of the Badger's protective armor stopped it, some of it didn't. The sergeant was bleeding from a gunshot wound to his arm, as well as from cuts on his face, and he had no idea where those had come from. It didn't matter. The moment the Badger's guns went silent was the moment Rupak would be free to push in on his squad. What happened next might have been called inevitable. A Rupak soldier climbed high enough to escape Stanga and the rest of his squad's notice. Or maybe they did see him, but not soon enough. Maybe too late, the boys nailed the soldier and Stanga just didn't get to see it. 6 rounds, fired in a block, struck Stanga at a downward angle, shattering his right hip and much of his pelvis. His leg felt like it no longer existed beyond anguishing pain. The sergeant dropped with a grunt down from the Badger, and the vehicle's guns went silent. But the battle tempo only increased as the Rupak Special Forces seized their opportunity.
"Badger 6 is down," Stewart reported. "Rupak are moving off the ridge. Where are you guys?"
"We're getting held up by Rupak regulars," Lieutenant Harmon replied. "Fall back. Hauler ETA in less than 1 minute."
Stewart looked around. Dunn couldn't run. Brown had been shot in the gut. Kincaid had lost the fingers on his left hand when a round struck his weapon. They were messed up. And even if they could move, Stanga might still be alive.
"We're staying put," Stewart replied. "Get here."
At the rear of the Badger, Stanga was struggling to stay awake. He pulled himself away from the gun, trying to slip into the rear cabin of the vehicle. Not for safety. He knew he was going to die. But to activate the Badger's anti-personnel weapons, get the thing shooting at Rupak without him. Surely the individual soldiers didn't have the same jamming technology their ship had been equipped with. Rupak's soldiers were now pushing from their positions. Stanga felt a round pass through the calf of his good leg. Another struck his ankle as he tumbled into the rear cabin, painting his path with thick strokes of his own blood. Though the pain was almost unbearable, he pulled himself up to interface with the vehicle's control screen, leaving bloody smears on the glowing glass. Just a little longer. The interface was easy. His hands were slow. Just a little longer. Something bounced and rattled into the cabin. Stanga didn't have to look to know it was a grenade. His gaze remained on the screen, his icy fingers weakly tapping out final orders. Just a little longer. The grenade detonated. The Badger's guns stayed offline. Brody seemed to find Rupak regulars everywhere he looked. Usually that was a cause for celebration, but now he had to be restrained. Innocents were everywhere. This wasn't the typical fight where Rupak probed the edges, allowing the Osei to find cover and leaving Brody with an empty playing field. He had a few brief opportunities to fight Brody style, but mostly he found himself electing not to engage. The enemy was mixing in among the people, and that called for precision fighting. Precision fighting was not Brody style. Still, the android did what he could. While medium-range combat was rife with the possibility of civilian casualties as bullets went beyond their targets and into the dwellings of the Osei, hand-to-hand combat held significantly less risk. He only needed to catch the squirrely bastards. An opportunity came when Brody found a Rupak soldier making short work of a few Osei militia. This wasn't one of the regulars. He was healthy, loaded up, and clad in black tactical armor. Alexa and Lieutenant Harmon had designated these as Rupak's special forces. And lucky dog, Brody's target had a friend. Brody had been moving along the top of the pods and fabricated buildings, but now he jumped down, landed behind the nearest soldier, and lifted him off the ground by his neck. With a heave, he hurled the man at a tree, impaling him on a branch.
"Stick around," he said.
Incoming rounds from the second soldier sprayed against his armored back. He turned. The Rupak soldier took a step back.
"Transmitting something?" Brody said. "Yep. Still got it."
To his surprise, the Rupak soldier didn't attempt to flee. Instead, he fumbled for something from his rigging and darted forward to place it on the android. Brody felt a sudden rushing sensation. Too many lights, too much information. He was overcome by the surge and dropped to a knee before shaking his head and standing back up.
"That packed a punch. My turn."
He grabbed the soldier, who looked terrified that his device hadn't shut the android down, and pulled the man in close. More rounds impacted against his armor.
"You brought friends," Brody exclaimed.
He turned to face the other Rupak soldiers who were taking well-aimed shots, careful not to hit their own. Grabbing his captive's arm, he forced him to wave.
"Say hello."
He shifted the soldier into a headlock.
"Now say goodbye."
With a crack, Brody broke the man's neck, the soldier's slumped dead weight hanging from the crook of Brody's arm.
"Nobody wake my friend,"
Brody told the other Rupak, who were warily advancing, all of them holding the same sensory overloading devices.
"He's out cold."
Brody dropped the body and sent machine gun fire from the hip, yelling a primal battle cry as he raked it back and forth across the scattering Rupak. "Brody," Alexa called. "The Rangers need assistance at Badger 6. I need you there."
"Just gotta finish killing some of these Rupak fancy boys first."
"You're engaging one of the elite teams?" Brody felt Alexa push past his defensive walls and look through his systems.
"I hate that. Feels weird."
"Brody, run away." The Rupak soldiers were scrambling on the ground, crawling despite their wounds, but still moving toward Brody, spreading out so as to hit him from multiple angles. One of them launched a device at Brody which missed, but still managed to cause a static haze through his artificial brain. If enough of those little scramblers hit him, Brody understood they'd have a chance of shutting him down. Maybe not permanently, but he'd be taken out of the fight. Still, he wasn't about to run away.
"No can do, sis. These colors don't run,"
I'm not concerned about you so much as needing to know what their intentions are. Now shoot and move.
All right, geez.
Brody's arm shuffled through weapons options until he settled on a shotgun attachment loaded with slugs. He sent two rounds into a Rupak chest and then turned and ran.
You happy now?
Are they following you? Brody turned around.
Roger.
They're chasing you, Alexa said. The most dangerous weapon in the Yosei camp.
I know. Crazy, right? But it's their funeral.
This isn't just an attack, Brody. These Rupak operatives, whoever they are, they don't care about the colony or the ranger presence. They're here for us.
Brody kept running, easily putting distance between himself and his pursuers.
Shouldn't I turn around and let them find me then?
No. But we can use this. Move to Badger 6. Hurry.
If I'm running, who's gonna kill these guys?
If you move fast enough, you.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Brody pushed himself until Badger 6 was in view. It wasn't a pretty sight. The vehicle was disabled, and Rupak soldiers were engaged in a firefight with a small group of rangers. Brody knew those men well. They were beat to hell, but still fighting. Well, he could do something about that.
Lead them away, Brody.
The big walking suit of armor had hoped to join the gun battle, but Alexa was a sharp cookie with a whole bunch of chocolate chips and none of the things that ruin it like walnuts, Brody told himself.
Roger, I'll distract them.
They're after you. This fight is a detour from their mission. I'm sure of it.
Brody threw his arms wide, waving emphatically, and sent his booming voice at the Rupak soldiers, adding a suitable Austrian accent.
Come on! Come on, kill me! I'm here! Kill me! Come on, do it now! Kill me!
The Rupak soldiers almost immediately disengaged, sending only suppressing fire toward the rangers as they broke away to pursue the android.
Keep your speed down, Alexa advised. I don't want you to lose them.
Where am I taking them?
I'll mark it. This will converge the two Rupak teams that are after you.
Roger, Brody said. And then I get to kill them?
An overhead roar announced the arrival of a pair of heavy hauler predators. They were on a course to land at the same spot Alexa had indicated on the map. Then, with a whoomp, Brody felt another of the sensory-altering jolts. One of the Rupak devices had struck him on the calf. He felt himself slowing down. Another struck his back, followed by another. Alexa was transmitting, but the message wasn't coming through. Brody couldn't make anything out. His optics were on the fritz. He seemed to be skipping through time. The world went black, and then blinked back into existence with Rupak special forces closing in on him from behind and advancing on him from the front.
Oh, mama, Brody said, trying to lift his arms to fire but finding them unable to do so.
But the Rupak soldiers held their fire, slowly advancing on the battle android.
Maybe they want to capture us and torture us to death.
Brody's visuals went offline, and his auditory sensors soon followed, but not before picking up the chatter of wounded Rupak moving back toward the camp. And that wasn't the only thing in the air.